on a special Memorial Day edition of Flashpoints, we rebroadcast the full hour of an interview with death row prisoner Kevin Cooper, who talks about his case and the criminal injustice system. I'm Nora Barrows Friedman with Dennis Bernstein and Leslie Kane. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. If you believe the claims of death row prisoner Kevin Cooper that he is innocent, and there are many reasons to do so, then the state of California should be brought up on charges of attempted murder and false imprisonment. 11 federal judges of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals have enough doubt about Cooper's guilt or various violations of his due process that they opposed the court's recent denial of a rehearing to examine further evidence key to Cooper's case. Cooper has been denied such hearings in the past, most recently on May 11th. In a 100-page-plus dissent issued on the 11th, Judge W. Fletcher of the Ninth Circuit warned that the state may be about to execute an innocent man. Kevin Cooper spoke to Flashpoints last 5 years ago in 2004, 5 days after the state came within a few hours of murdering him. Cooper's lawyers are appealing the recent ruling by the entire Ninth Circuit to the Supreme Court. Cooper has been on death row for over 25 years. He joins us now from death row on San Quentin. Kevin Cooper, welcome.
Thank you, Dennis.
And also joining the discussion is Leslie Kane. She's a friend of Cooper's who has been visiting him for over 10 years on death row and has done extensive research on the case. Again,
this
Kevin Cooper.
This call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
Again, Kevin Cooper, welcome to Flashpoints. It is good to have you back with us, and let me thank you for sending over that painting. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Dennis. Thank you for having me.
Well, again, good to have you. How are you doing? Are you okay?
Yes, I'm well.
All right.
I'm strong.
All right. I'm glad to hear that. I think it's important because a lot of people don't know the case, don't know what's going on here. Why don't you tell us, set the scene, what was happening 5 years ago, several hours before the state tried to kill you? Tell us what the situation was.
The situation was hectic. I was locked inside this dungeon here in the bowels of San Quentin prison where these voluntary executioners were trying to murder me, torture me and murder me. And but somehow or another, I managed to get a stay of execution. And from that state, which was based on a Brady violation, the state withholding material exculpatory evidence, I was able to survive that madness. And now I seem to be right back.
In one moment, Leslie Kane is going to go over the recent decisions and the things that people can do as well. We're going to be talking about that later on, Kevin. But again, when you say the madness, you were within 8 hours of being executed by the state.
3 hours and 42 minutes to be exact.
How many?
3 hours and 42
That's minutes. What I thought. The Chronicle reported 8 hours. That's why I never trust them. So you were within 3 hours, and where were you being held?
In a room right next to the death chamber waiting room. At various points in time, I was in different parts of this prison. I'm over here where I am now, called East Block. Then they moved me to another part of the prison called North Egg, which is right above the death house. And then they moved me down inside the death waiting room.
Kevin Cooper, it must have been a devastating experience coming 3 hours within your life, knowing, feeling in your heart that you're an innocent man. Could you describe what happens, what was going on, and the impact that has on you and a person?
No, I can't. That's how unbelievable it is. You have to experience it to truly appreciate it and understand it. But it has an effect on you emotionally, psychologically, mentally, spiritually. I mean, it's a life-altering event. It's so real. It's so real that it seems unreal. I mean, there's no way I can honestly do this, what happened to me or anyone else that was tortured and murdered by any state, in any death house in this country.
They put you through a ritual, don't they, in which they're, in essence, attempting to get your cooperation in your own killing, in your own murder.
Exactly. They want you to be complicit. Exactly. They want you to participate. They want you to make them feel good about killing you. And I refused to do that. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't eat their food. I couldn't do anything that they wanted me to do. I couldn't make... asked me or told me to choose the method of which I wanted them to murder me by. I couldn't do that. How can I do that? Look how sick. That even sounds sick. You know? No, they kept asking me, did I want a last meal? If so, what did I want? I don't want to eat your food. I don't want to choose the method of how they're going to murder me, how they're going to torture me. That's for them to decide. I can't deal with it. That's how unreal the situation is.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Kevin Cooper on death row at San Quentin. Last we spoke with Kevin was 5 years ago in 2004 when he came within 3 hours of being murdered by the state of California. Again, I'm Dennis Bernstein, and also in the studio is Leslie Kane. She's a former producer and host of Flashpoints, a friend of Cooper's who has done extensive research on the case. Leslie.
Kevin, hi, it's Leslie Kane. I just wanted to, in order to bring the story up to date, we've talked about how, you know, you came so close to being executed after the whole ritualistic thing was over and you were back in your cell, and you have, you know, maintained your position as an activist, of course.
This recorded call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
But, I mean, how did you recover? I mean, if you can describe, and I know you said it's really, really hard to describe, but... the first few weeks after this horrific attempt on your life, how did you actually recover from that and kind of bounce back into the struggle that you've been carrying on so powerfully ever since?
Well, I've been blessed to have friends out here, such as yourself, who've taken time out their lives to come in this modern-day plantation and visit me and spend quality time with me. You know, I read a lot of books. I do my artwork, which to me is kind of a therapeutic type thing. It helps me escape the reality of this hectic day-to-day life in this place. And so through a combination of things, through a combination of willpower, because I understand that if I don't recover, if I didn't recover, that these people would win. And I'm not about to let them win if I can help it. I had to find that inner strength, and somehow I managed to do it, but it was hard then, and it's still hard now.
What are you reading now?
Right now I'm reading Slavery by Another Name, and that is by Douglas A. Blotton.
And you just finished Mumia Abu-Jamal's book, is that right?
Yes, Your House Lawyers. I read a lot of different books, and I do a lot of artwork, and I write a lot. I mean, I do a lot of... a variety of different things, you know, in order to live here on death row.
And a big part of what you do, Kevin Cooper, is you are an activist. From that cell, you deal with a lot of activists in the Bay Area and around the country. You're part of a movement to abolish the death penalty and play a very important role in that. And can you describe how important, what role that activism plays in your life and how that keeps you going in prison?
Well, this activism has allowed me to vindicate myself, because I do feel vindicated in what those 11 justices on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals have just done. Not only have they said that I'm innocent and that they agree that I'm innocent, they have proven my innocence, and they have proven how the state of California went about framing me. It is all in the first 105 pages. So without this movement, a lot of the things that I now know, even the lawyers that took on this case pro bono, which is Orr, Harrington, and Sutcliffe, None of that would have came about without the movement, without this activism. Every single person that has ever done anything in this movement to help, you know, expose corruption of any death penalty case, any case through it, laid the foundation for us to walk on and to build what's happening in Madrid.
And you just made reference to this filing, just so people know what you made reference to about the 11 judges. There was a filing on May 11th in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, as Dennis mentioned earlier, actually denying you a rehearing. But what was really important
you
about that...
120 seconds left on this call.
What was important was the fact that we had 11 judges who dissented in 101 pages, as you just mentioned. And I want to get into what some of the points are that these judges made and the some of the statements that they made. Why don't you talk about, first of all, it was a very, very powerful dissent, laying out all the details of your case. What was your reaction when you read that?
Vindication. I felt no matter what happens to me, whether these people go ahead and torture me and murder me, no matter what happens to me, I did what I set out to do. And we as a people, as a movement, did what we set out to do. And that has proved that I'm innocent. There is no way in the world that 11 federal circuit judges would come to the conclusions that they came to if it weren't the truth. These people don't deal in lies. They deal with the truth. Now, there are other judges that...
You have 60 seconds left on this call.
There are other judges up there who know the truth. But they haven't said anything. They've either just ignored it or said it was procedurally barred. They never said we were lying. They didn't say the step didn't happen. They just said it's procedurally barred or it's too late or this or that or it's harmless error or this or that. But they never said I was lying. Now these other judges, these 11, and they're Republicans and Democrats. Even the chief judge of the Ninth Circuit, which is a Republican, a right-wing conservative Republican, is on my side.
And again, to be clear, as we quoted in the introduction, the writer, the judge who wrote the 100-plus page dissent, Judge Fletcher, said that the state may be about to execute an innocent man. So he didn't really restrain in any way from suggesting that the state could become a murderer once again.
What Judge Fletcher stated is not just present-day fact. It's a historical fact. If you look at, and see, history is my teacher. History has exposed all types of things to me, good and bad, about this country. And the one thing that has most definitely taught me is that this country was founded upon killing innocent people. It was built upon killing innocent people. And it was maintained, and is being maintained today, on killing innocent people. So, this is something that this country's always done. This is why they don't ever seem to blink an eye about it. This is how they can say that it's not unconstitutional to kill an innocent person, because they've always done it. And somehow or another, when you find the constitutional violations, well, they seem to bypass them or to get around them or to procedurally bomb, because this is what they do. This is all they know. So I'm not surprised that they'll kill me as an innocent man. But what I am surprised about is that these judges, and it's not just Fletcher, it's not just him. It's 10 others with him, and there's others that just didn't say nothing but also agree with him.
Well, the point here is that 11 federal judges have opposed the recent decision by the Ninth Circuit to deny you this important new hearing. Let me tell people, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. I'm Dennis Bernstein with Leslie Kane. We're speaking with Kevin Cooper. He is on San Quentin death row. He has been there for 25 years, and we are talking about a recent decision that could leave you in the hands of the Supreme Court, which would be fairly troubling.
Kevin, just to give people some examples of some of the corruption that's gone on in your case. First of all, you were convicted in 1983 for murdering four people, and I just want to give you the chance to make the point. You have always stated from the very beginning that you were innocent of this crime, correct?
Exactly. Yes, I have.
And one of the things that the judge pointed out in this recent ruling was that certain evidence in your original trial in 1983 was withheld from the jury. And if that evidence had been introduced, you would very likely not have been convicted. Can you give us some examples of that, of some of the key pieces of evidence that were not included?
This recorded call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
Well, there was a pair of bloody coveralls that a lady turned over to the police and told them that her boyfriend, who was a convicted murderer, left at her house, and they were covered in blood. She and her sister, seeing him getting out of a car that matched the description of a victim's stolen car, and things of that nature, and they just threw those coveralls away. So what they did was, by throwing those coveralls away, they eliminated jury from learning about the coveralls, learning about the guy who left them at her house, learning about he was a convicted murderer, learning about a whole bunch of stuff. They denied me due process on that. They also withheld evidence that the warden at CIM at that time, her name was Ms. Pearl, she told them that the tennis shoes that they tried to say that I had were not prison-issued tennis shoes as they claimed they were, because those tennis shoes were supposed to have matched an imprint that they had found in blood on the victim's bed sheet that they did not find at the crime scene, but somehow they found at the crime lab. So it's stuff like this. When you listen to me talk about it, it don't sound real, but this is so real. This is so real. It is ready to kill me behind stuff like this, just making evidence disappear. There was a blue shirt that they found. They threw it away. They didn't tell nobody. We didn't even know it existed until 2004, when we got some police logs that happened to mention that somebody called the police and told them about a blue shirt, and the police wouldn't pick it up. And on a police log, this is evidence pickup, and the shirt was in connection with the Ryan and Hughes murders.
Absolutely so.
No.
And yes, so these are just some examples. Of course, we see this in other cases in this country where people are wrongfully convicted.
Right.
And Judge Fletcher actually wrote in his summary of his 101-page statement here, this: given the weakness of the evidence against Cooper, if the state had given Cooper's attorneys this exculpatory evidence, it is highly unlikely that Cooper would have been convicted. So your original trial was a problem. And of course, there have been many other things since then that have developed. And the other thing that Judge Fletcher has focused on is the issue of evidence having been tampered with, but both at the time of the trial and in the years following.
Right.
So you want to talk about that aspect a little bit?
Well, they tampered with, I asked for DNA testing on a drop of blood that they had claimed was found inside the victim's house. It was supposed to have been one drop of blood. So I asked, when DNA evidence came around, I asked for it. And at first the state said no. I asked again, they said no. I asked again, they said no. And then the fourth time, they just happened to say yeah. But what they didn't tell us was before they said yeah, they let the criminalist who was messed with it at trial, they go down there and take it out for 24 hours, along with my saliva and other evidence, my other, blood that they took from me when I was arrested. And they didn't tell nobody.
This recorded call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
So then this guy puts it back after having it out 24 hours, and we found out about it. But we found out about it after the DNA tests were done, and the DNA tests come back and say that that was mine. So what's stuff like that? Cigarette butt. One cigarette butt was had a yellow filter in 1983, and in 2001, when it was DNA tested, it had a white filter. And it was 4 millimeters in length, and I think it was 1983, and then it turned out to be 7.7 millimeters in 2001. How do cigarettes grow after they're taken apart and tested and then get put back together? I mean, so it's stuff like this that we prove. We have photographic evidence of all the stuff that I'm saying. And these people, these court systems, just ignored everything. They just ignored it or act like it didn't exist, or they made excuses for it. And the bottom line is, they're giving me the type of trial that they gave Dred Scott back in 1857. They're saying that this man don't have no rights that a white man, and in this case a white woman, a judge, is bound to respect, because they messed over all my rights. Every last single one of them. In order to kill me for something that I did not do. Even Joshua Ryan, who was a child at the time, he told them people when he saw my face on TV that Kevin Cooper didn't do it, that it was three white men. I believe Judge Fletcher mentions that in his dissent as well. You know, now, if Joshua Ryan saw my picture on TV and said, Yeah, that was him. Well, they would have used that against him. But he said, no, it wasn't me. He told his grandmother it wasn't me. He told other people it wasn't me. He told the police it wasn't me.
And just so people know, Joshua Ryan was a, there were four people that were murdered. Joshua Ryan was a young boy in the family that was killed. He was not killed, but severely injured during the assault on this family. So he was basically a witness, the only living witness.
The only eyewitness, right?
And the only living eyewitness, and he was interviewed very shortly after this crime. And by two different people in the hospital, and did indicate that there were three white men that were, that committed the crime.
In fact, they even found a police log in 2004, the same time they found that police log about that missing blue shirt, that indicates that they were looking for three young males driving the car of the victim.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. I'm Dennis Bernstein with Leslie Kane. We're speaking with Kevin Cooper on death row in San Quentin. A recent decision by the Ninth Court of Appeals is sort of negative in that the entire court voted against your request for a new rehearing, but 11 federal judges are saying, based on lack of due process or their belief that you are guilty, they are
just... The call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
But let me ask you, Kevin Cooper...
Their belief that I'm innocent.
Exactly. And what I want to ask you, in terms of the entire process, you've been talking with Leslie about jury tampering, messing around with evidence, ignoring eyewitness account. Could you talk about the nature of some of the personnel and how racism plays into that?
Oh, down there in San Bernardino County, where this case happened, is one of the racist counties in this state. I mean, they had, shortly after my arrest, they had a gorilla hung in effigy with a sign that said, hang a troglodyte, speaking about me, calling me a troglodyte. They wanted to get their hands on Kevin Cooper so they can be their justice. You know, the type of justice they always give black men who are accused of killing.
Say that again. What? Explain that again.
They had a gorilla hung in effigy, and it had a sign that said, hang the troglodyte. And they were calling me a troglodyte. And they said they wanted to get their hands on me. They wanted to give me justice, their form of justice.
Well, and I said, by the way, I said jury tampering. I meant evidence tampering.
Right, evidence tampering.
And what about questionable personnel and actions by personnel regarding the actual, say, chain of custody of evidence and so on and so forth?
I'm going to put it to you like this. The head criminalist, the person who was in charge of all the evidence that they used to convict me, was a heroin addict. He was fired shortly after my conviction for stealing 5 pounds of heroin out the evidence lock.
His name?
William Beard. He was a lieutenant, I believe. And he was using that heroin for his own personal use and to sell to drug dealers. Now, he didn't stand trial. He wasn't, didn't do no time in prison or nothing, obviously. They just let him go. And this is the man who had another pair of tennis shoes, just like the ones they claimed that I had, which I didn't have. He had a pair like that in the crime lab. He had all types of stuff in the crime lab. If you read Fletcher's dissent, everything is in there. If anybody takes the time and looks it up and reads it, it will piss you off so much you might even want to get involved in this movement if you're not already in it to try to help save my life. Because this is American justice, old school style. This is what they used to do to black men back in the day. They're still doing it to me here in the 21st century. But it is not just doing it to me, Dennis.
This recorded call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
When I ask people to believe me, they wouldn't do it. So I'm asking them to believe this judge. But if you believe them, that judge and all the other judges that are going along with him, then you have to ask yourself a bigger question. You have to ask yourself, if they did this to Kevin Cooper and these judges are saying they did, then how many other men and women are on death row or in prison in this country who had the same thing done to them by the same type of people that's doing this to Kevin?
You have 120 seconds left on this call.
I am not so special of a person that these people will go out their way to frame me and not do it to anyone else. I'm not the only person that they withheld evidence on. I'm not the only person who they tampered with evidence in their case, or threw away evidence, or did what they do, tamper with witnesses or whatever. This is in the system so deeply that people need to start to think to put an end to this madness. And that's how I really feel. After you read that, it has to open a person's eyes if they want their eyes to be open.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. That's Kevin Cooper. By the way, if you want to know a lot more about this case, more information about the case, you can go to SaveKevinCooper.org. Is that correct?
60 seconds left on this call.
SaveKevinCooper.org and find out more information. There's a petition there. You might want to know more about that. Calls for Leslie.
On this website, SaveKevinCooper.org, there will be a link where people can go and read this recent filing by the Ninth Circuit. This is really an historic filing. It's very rare that 11 judges will dissent in 101 pages. So we encourage everyone to go to SaveKevinCooper.org, get the link to the petition or the recent filing in the court, and you can read it for yourself, and it lays out everything about his case that you would want to know.
Now, we're going to get cut off in a second. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the case and more about the systematic injustice system that railroads poor people and people of color to the death house. We're speaking with Kevin Cooper at San Quentin, facing death.
You're listening to a special interview with death row prisoner Kevin Cooper here on Flashpoints. We'll be right back after this musical break.
If you got the nerve, lash out for your just desserts. It's not just the word. Some of y'all heads up in the cloud. I'ma bring y'all back to earth. It's black back to burn. Whoa, y'all talking about out your mouth. I'm not concerned, cause y'all got to learn. It's y'all turned like Detroit Red. When his head had an ultra perm. The long walk, I run your bare heels, so throw on your boots. The game camouflage like army suit. But I can see it more clear, cause I came with the coupe in here. Ring the alarm, inform the truth. Send them out into the world, go to war on the flu. Eye to eye with the enemy. You just wanna shoot. Now I'm coming at your neck, stick your hand, something wrong with me. Something wrong with you. With a cheek just way too smart to question. The enemy, the brothers of a dark complexion. The governments of the world, the shark infested. They heavy on weaponry like Charlton Heston, man. Look, it gets low here.
To the pigs is my basic statement. I spit street stories till I taste the pavement. Trying to stay out the pen where we face enslavement. Had a foolproof hustle till they traced the payments. I was gripping my palm around something wrong. Trying to find Psalm number 151. Forget what I'm old as I clutch the Komodo. Put down the bottle and come get the gun. I get off the chain like Kunta Kinte with a Mac-10. That one was gone like a dollar in a crack den. Subtly subtracting seeds and stems. Mind cloudy through the weeds and phlegm. Numbing my brain off of that and the Jesus hymns. If we waiting for the time to fight these is them. Telling us to relax while they ease it in. We're getting breezed again. The truth I write is so cold it'll freeze my pen. A boots rider, it's a pleasure to meet you. Never let they pump. Never defeat you. They got us on the corner wearing pleather and see-through. All y'all's gold mines, they wanna deplete you. I ain't just finna rap on the track, I'm finna clap on my back. And it's been stacking it at 500 years before icebergs ever leaned back in the lack. Before they told Rosa Black in the back. Before the CIA told Ricky Ross to put crack in the sack. The Gills got traded rapping for smack. This beat alone should get platinum plaque. I'd rather see a million of us ecstatic to scrap. Cause if we rapping them back, we automatically stack. Check it out.
And see, reboots me, activating the community. Up in the bay like Huey P. They suck a free and remind me of the BK. There's love for me, but the beast got it twisted. I'll untangle it. The black mind is twine like the ropes they used to hang us with. This my favorite. I came in the game with a new way to spit.
got your questionnaire, who you banging with? Take it back to M-Hotep, throw a step deeper like a poor righteous teacher with holy intellect. Killer flow for my real, left and informed the failure to... That's a bit of death. Once again, you can feel hip-hop underground, still about my guap, gangsta like...
Welcome back. We're speaking with Kevin Cooper. He is on death row at San Quentin, where he has been for 25 years. He is fighting for his life. 5 years ago, he came within 3 hours of being murdered by the state of California, and Kevin Cooper has always maintained his own innocence. Kevin, one of the things that we say on this program, we refer to it not as a matter of hyperbole, but we refer to the justice system as the criminal injustice system because there is a pattern and practice of racism and a situation where if you don't have the money, usually to pay for the lawyers, you end up on death row and you die without a proper defense. You have become an expert in understanding how the system works and how it is stacked up against poor people and people of color. Could you talk a little bit about your research and your activities in this regard?
Yes, I had an attorney that was appointed to me by a federal district judge, Marilyn Huff. His name was Robert Amadon. Marilyn Huff is the same judge that Pritchard talks about very badly in this dissent. But this man was a criminal attorney. Damn near got me executed because everything he did was against my best interest. But nonetheless, he was still getting paid, him and the people that he had working with him. So in this movement, I decided to take matters into my own hands because I have learned, as I said earlier, history is my teacher. And I have learned that, historically speaking, we people who are and locked in these prisons have these attorneys for the most part that don't give a damn about us because all we ordered them is a paycheck. But I cared about me enough to get involved with this movement, to get involved with the campaign in the death penalty, with socialist viewpoint, with socialist action, with a whole bunch of other different organizations and people. And together, we all formulated a plan. And the plan was to educate the public. And we did this over and over and over and over for years and years and years. And this is how, just before these people were going to murder me, I somehow managed to get in touch with the Innocence Project in Santa Clara University. And they ended up finding this law firm now who took my case, Ward, Harrington, and Sutcliffe, and they did it pro bono. Now, this law firm was a white
collar. This recorded call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
A white collar or a corporate law firm saved my life. They're not a criminal law firm. The criminal lawyers who work in the criminal justice system, damn, they got me killed. So this right there says a lot about this system. But the difference being, besides them killing, is they also had the money. And money makes a difference. And through their hard work, they completely turned this case around. They got me a state, and they found out all this new evidence that we have now. And this evidence is what Fletcher speaks about in his defense. Most of it, we didn't know. But if you don't have a committed people, whether they're lawyers or not, in your corner, you're in trouble. If you don't have who care about you, to fight for you, and to fight with you, you're dead. And if you don't have a powerful law firm, or powerful people, lawyers who care, who have the money to fight back, they're damn sure dead. But I do know this, that if you keep on fighting, you keep on working, and you don't give up, there is a chance. I had a chance. I mean, look at the law firm I have now, and the work that they did, and the evidence they uncovered, and the constitutional violations they discovered, I found out. And I'm still one decision away from being tortured and murdered by this state. Once they restart this killing machine up here in San Quentin prison. And believe me, I will be tortured in this prison just as well and as good as any other person has been tortured in these death houses across this country. Make no mistake about that. Because these people tell you they don't torture, and because they tell you that this is humane, no, you don't believe them. You can't believe them. Your history tells you not to believe them. And I do not look forward to being tortured and murdered by the state of California.
Now, it's interesting. In I think it's important to note, as you refer to torture and murder, that every part of this process is that, including the actual murder by lethal injection. It is interesting and important to note that one of the judges that supports your murder is named Judge Bybee, and he was a key player in the Bush administration's torture program. Does that interest you?
This recorded call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
In 2004, I received a 9-2 decision for a stay. One of the two judges that refused to give me that stay was Judge Bybee. And now we come to find out that Judge Bybee is also one of the people who wrote those torture memos for the Bush-Cheney administration, allowing torture to happen to criminals or people they consider criminals, whether it's in Abu Ghraib or Guantanamo Bay or any other place around the world. He's fine with them being tortured there, but he's also fine with them being tortured here because he supports the death penalty. So torture is part of what he believes in. But these people that he's torturing and that he believes in torturing are poor people. Not rich people, but poor people, and mostly people of color. He ain't got no problem with that. Yet he can sit his ass up on the Ninth Circuit like some god and dictate who should live and who should die and who should be tortured and shit.
Well, he may find himself before too long in some kind of dock in the international, various international tribunals facing, crimes against humanity.
Yeah, right. I believe that when I see it.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Again, we're speaking with Kevin Cooper on death row. He is, as he says, one step away. The Ninth Circuit has denied his request for a hearing into key evidence based on evidence tampering, extensive evidence tampering, and we're also talking about the aspects that make it impossible for poor people and people of color to get a fair trial. And just, you've done a lot of research on this, and I'm noting that more and more poor women are on death row. At people don't realize there's a death row at Chowchilla where many women are facing death. Is this a part of sort of there are more and more poor people, so there'll be more and more women who find themselves facing this similar situation?
Well, historically speaking, women have always been on death row, whether that death row has been in their own homes where they've been victims of domestic violence, or whether they're, you know, shot and killed in the street or in prison. I mean, but there's never much said about it. But believe me, these women that are down there, most definitely are all poor. They have never been given, quote-unquote, equal rights in their entire life. And for the first time in their life, if they do get executed, they'll be given equal rights. They'll have the equality of a man death row inmate because they'll get the same amount of poison pumped in their bodies that I get pumped in mine. No, this is how they look at it. This, because that's the reality of this situation. These women who are...
This recorded call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
Who are victims of all types of things. Suffering silence today as they have historically. You never hear the news media talk about women on death row in this state. But one day you will. And they'll talk about them so proudly. For the first time in so many years, the state of California is going to execute a woman. No, that's a damn shame. That's a disgusting thing that these people do. But they do it. Other states have.
You're listening to Flashpoints on KPFM. Leslie Kane here with Dennis Bernstein. Kevin, you mentioned earlier about the importance of having good lawyers and how very few death row inmates have them. We know you have good lawyers, but we also know it's extremely important that people get involved and fight for your case. You need all the help you can get because you're really going to be facing some serious possibility of being executed. And one person at this station certainly covered a lot was Stanley Tukey Williams, who indeed also, as I understand, I think he had pretty good lawyers. He had got a lot of attention, and he was executed. He was also a friend of yours. And I'm wondering if, and you know, you were able to help him out along the years that you knew each other. And I'm just wondering if you could share with our listeners some of the information, some of the story of your relationship with him.
He is my friend. He will always be my friend. He He's my brother, and he will always be my brother. Regardless of what Schwarzenegger and anyone else thinks about him, he's a good man. And it wasn't so much that I taught him anything. I learned more from him than I could ever teach him. But except when it came to the fact of him going through this ritual of death, the way they were going to search his arms or his veins, and the way they were going to send psychiatrists to his house and see if he was all right, the way they was going to mess with him psychologically, he didn't know about that because he'd never been through it before. As a matter of fact, before me, everybody else who went through it ended up dying. So nobody knew what to expect. But because I got that stay, I was able to share with him what I went through. So that is how I taught him. But other than that, man, they tortured him, and they murdered him, and it came out in court, in Fogel's court, that they did it. And they're going to do the same thing to me and to everybody else. You just want to try to go about it differently.
And when we say torture again, that includes a process by which they've deceived the public into suggesting and believing that lethal injection, this three-stage process, is humane. Could you please talk a little bit more about how that is massive and troubling torture?
It's not humane. If this system was humane, you know,
this recorded call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
If this system was humane, they wouldn't have to lie about it. They wouldn't have to lie about the people, not just in this state, but across the country, who've been tortured in these death houses. If it was humane, then the medical society, doctors and them would be participating in it. But it's not humane. It's inhumane. People won't even kill animals the same way that they're willing to kill us in this state and across the country.
You have 120 seconds left on this call.
This three-judge clocker that they use has been banned by the people who murder animals. They won't use that to kill an animal with. So, no, this is not humane. This is inhumane. This is torture. And because that poison that is pumping your body, you feel that. They just got you paralyzed so you can't scream up. And then they tell people who witness body contortions and all these things that their lying eyes didn't see what their eyes told their brain they saw. This system is sick, and the people that are running it is sick. So, no, I do not look forward to being strapped down on that gun and to have them put their needles in my arm and pump their poison in my body. I do not look forward to that process at all. And I am an innocent man. I am 11 Federal Circuit judges telling the world.
You have 60 seconds left on this call.
Warning the world, not just telling them, warning them, that this state is about to execute an innocent man. So what's the world going to do? They're going to step up to the plate and show everybody how humane they are, or they just going to turn the blind eye to my murder like they do everybody else, because that's what they do in this country called America.
Now, you have your lawyers bringing an appeal before the Supreme Court, and then there is, I believe there's actually two other possibilities in terms of you not being executed. So you've got the Supreme Court, you've got the governor, and I understand the president has the power also to commute. But let me ask you, if the Supreme Court turns you down, will you apply to the governor of California for a stay or clemency?
No.
Why? That's another option, isn't it?
No. I will not go to Arnold Schwarzenegger and ask him for clemency. I made my mind up about that the first time around when he denied me clemency without even looking at the information that we provided him. I further got more convinced about this the way they played with Stanley Tookie Williams and his clemency thing. They led him on until up to the last minute, got his hopes up high, and then turned him down like that. No. I will never give this man the opportunity or the power to turn me down about what is mine, something that he didn't give me and something that he has no right to take, which is my life. If I did that, if I went back to that man ever again, I surely would be losing my dignity, my self-respect. See, white men like him, they get off by playing God, by thinking that they're somebody special, that they have that power over life and death, that they can decide who should live and who should die. No, he If I lose the United States Supreme Court, if they don't hear my case, then I'm just dead. When they start this machine up, they'll either kill Mike Morales first, and then me, and they pick up where they left off at with him. And then they will do me. Well, they will do me and do him.
And then it'll be a chain reaction. They'll be doing a lot of people.
Yes, they will. And this will become just like Texas out here. This, you might as well call this Texas West. No, California, Texas. It'll be one thing. They'll be doing inmate after inmate after inmate.
We're speaking to Kevin Cooper on death row, there for 25 years. Now, the President of the United States, a great to-do has been made about this significant historic election of an African-American to the highest office of the land. The President of the United States has the power to pardon and commute a sentence. Would you appeal to the President? Would you ask your supporters to intercede in a situation where you say an innocent man is about to be murdered and a federal judge seems to agree with you?
My supporters have a mind of their own. They do what they do. I don't have to tell them to do nothing. That would be disrespectful to me to tell them to do anything, because they're adults. They do what they do. But me personally, no, because I don't believe he would do it. And I'm tired of getting my hopes up just to be let down.
This recorded call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
I don't believe in this system. I used to believe in this system because I'm innocent. No, I used to believe that these people would do the right thing. But the longer I stayed in this system and the more evidence that we found or discovered or came up with to show that I am innocent and that they did frame me and that they are framing me, the more and more they seem to get angry that we found this evidence and was determined to punish me even more. So this system is not only is it corrupt and bankrupt, it's run by some, not all, as evident by Judge Fletcher and those other judges that stood with him, that not all judges are bad, but there's enough of many that this system is corrupt. This system is corrupt to its core. These people don't even follow their own laws. The laws tell you that the prosecution cannot withhold material exculpatory evidence that a guy has a right to due process. But they don't give a damn. Man, so what? It's procedurally barred, or this or that or whatever. They don't care about the lives of poor people. So no, I'm not, man, feeling the system. If I get turned down in probably October, then I'm dead. But the one thing that they can't take away from me, or the people that supported me, is the fact that we did prove they framed me. We did prove I am innocent. Those 11 judges proved it.
Kevin, the other thing they can't take away from you is your dignity. And you mentioned dignity earlier, and you were not going to appeal for clemency because you want to maintain your dignity. You have managed to maintain dignity and lots of other incredibly admirable qualities while living in this tiny cage on death row. And I wonder if you could tell us how you do that. I mean, I know it's a huge question and maybe almost a superficial question, but it's really an amazing way that you have maintained your sanity, your dignity, and what life is like there, and how in that hellhole you're able to keep yourself together so well.
I don't know. Because life, the human spirit is strong. Human beings, some of us, we can adapt to anything if we work hard enough. And then the fact that I am innocent, I am truly innocent, that has kept me going for all these years. I never gave up hope. I still got hope. I mean, as you stated earlier, what these 11 judges did may be historic. It may be unprecedented. I have never, in all the years I've been fighting, I have never heard of 11 judges doing that. That's one block like that. Or writing not just a dissent, but how the state framed it. Bit by bit, how they planted evidence, how they destroyed evidence.
This recorded call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
So this gives me some hope. More judges have agreed with me, or agree with us, that are on the United States Supreme Court. So maybe that'll mean something to the United States Supreme Court. maybe they'll say, let us look at this. If they look at it, we'll win. Because the Constitution is on my side. They just didn't claim me. They just didn't do what they did to me. They also violated my constitutional rights under various cases, starting with Brady versus Maryland. So, I have hope. But my hope is not to the extent that is unrealistic, that I don't think that these people will kill me, because I know they will. I know that innocence makes no difference. Nope. I know that I am just one decision from being strapped down. And if that is the case, we did what we set out to do. In a way, which is prove my innocence. Those people wouldn't lie for me.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. That's the voice of Kevin Cooper. I'm Dennis Bernstein here with Leslie Kane. We're speaking with Kevin Cooper on death row at San Quentin. That's all the noise and the beeps and the interruptions that you hear in the background. I probably should have said that earlier, but they make a conversation very difficult, as they make everything nearly impossible for death row prisoners. They are prisoners of the state, that's the word. And you've been on that, as Leslie said, in that little cage for some 25 years. I mean, do you do 100 push-ups? Do you have beautiful posters on the wall? What is it that you look at that helps you? Can you see? You're perhaps in a place in one of the most beautiful places in the world in terms of where it's built, right on in the sort of Pacific Bay there, Golden Gate Bridge. They'd say Great Harbor Front. I'm surprised the real estate people didn't throw you to inland. So, but you don't get to see it, do you?
Yeah, well, that's a yes or no question. I go outside. You know, this place is a contradiction. It is beautiful real estate around here. You know, we get to go outside. We get to look up and see the sky and the birds, and you know, we can see the bridge, the Richmond San Rafael Bridge, and, you know, little things like that, depending on where you're located at. So I understand that. I mean, in the stage that I'm in, you know, yeah, I have paintings up in here because I'm an artist. I paint. I do a lot of stuff. I work out in here. I work out outside. You know, no, I don't do 100 push-ups. Sometimes I do 400, 500, sometimes 300, sometimes 200. Yeah, I exercise. I do what I do. Because the human spirit will not, my human spirit will not allow me to give up.
This recorded call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
So, I work out, I exercise my mind by reading a lot, by writing a lot. You know, by interacting with my friends like Crystal and Rebecca and Carol, and, you know, Jeff and just people, man. Leslie and her son Paul, they come and visit me. So, I managed to stay active out there in that world through them. You know? And I'm just a human being, man. That's it. No trying to survive this mess. And with the help of a lot of people and my will, my inner strength, my ancestors who I so strongly believe in, who I read and try to understand their life under situations that were far worse than mine, but somehow they managed to make a life for themselves. I go on. I continue to live. And that's all I can do is live. Day by day, one day at a time. But I have hope, and hope is a strong thing. Hope is life. If a person don't have hope, they don't have no life. So until, up until the last minute, I will have hope.
And would you like to make a sort of a final statement in this interview in terms of people out in the listening audience, people around the country, people facing similar circumstances as you? What's the word?
I would like to first thank everybody who has helped this movement in the death penalty. Not just help me, but help everybody, because we all need help. Because this, as we all know, is not about me. It's not about any one person. This is about a system which has historically and systematically murdered men, women, and children who look just like me. Because they can do it, for the most part, just because they can do it. We need help. We do. We got our backs up against the wall. These people got a cold little twist they just may throw down and how they can kill us and get away with it. Had each other on the back. A good job. Just like they've been throughout the history of this country. So we need you to get involved. to fight for human life, to fight for humanity, to fight for us, to fight for yourself. Because you don't have to commit a crime in this country to go to jail. You actually don't have to commit a murder to go to death row. All these exonerations should tell you that, to teach you that. So what are you going to do if something happens to you? Who are you going to call? Who's going to be there for you if you're not there for somebody else? You know, what you give out comes back to you. One of the reasons I honestly believe that I have help is because I've helped a lot of people. Because what you put out, it does come back. So I'm asking you to please get involved in this. Not just for me. Take me out the equation. Do it for humanity. Do it for Oscar Grant. Do it for his family. Do it for Sean Bell. You know, do it for all the black men and
women. This recorded call is from an inmate at a California correctional facility.
Men and women, the poor white men and women who have been murdered between the Pacific and Atlantic Ocean by the same system who says they're supposed to protect and serve them. The same type of system that allowed Oscar Grant to be murdered is the same system that's going to kill me. It's the same system that tortures being cooked. It's the same system that took that stuff that I got out there in Florida where they tortured him on one.
You have 120 seconds left on this call.
The time has come to stand up and be what you say you are. An adult. A human being who cares.
All right. Well, if people want to speak, learn more about this case, SaveKevinCooper.org, SaveKevinCooper.org. You can read some of his writings and get a lot of information, all that you would need to understand more about the recent decisions and what the battle is in front of Kevin, who is now appealing to the Supreme Court through his lawyers this most recent decision and maintaining all the way through his innocence. I want to thank Leslie Kane, who has been visiting with Kevin for over 10 years, did extensive research at one point on the case. And in a moment, we're going to be inviting some activists in to give you more precise details in terms of what you can do. But Kevin Cooper, we thank you for the privilege of speaking with you today, and we hope that we can keep our ongoing multi-year dialogue open with you.
Thank you, Dennis, for having me.
And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints, which airs every weekday and is produced by Dennis Bernstein and Nora Barrows Friedman. Our contributing producer is Robert Knight, and our technical director is Eric Klein. Our Friday co-host is Francisco Herrera, Miguel Molina is our roving producer, and JR and the Block Report contribute to this program. To comment on today's program, please contact us at dbernstein@igc.org. Look us up on the web at www.flashpoints.net for our archive shows. Dozens of affiliate stations across the country broadcast Flashpoints on a regular basis. Please email us your call letters and Flashpoints broadcast schedule at dbernstein@igc.org, and we'll add you to our website. Many thanks to our web team, and thank you for listening.
Civilcourt Elementary School is pleased to present our fifth annual gala and silent auction fundraiser, Caribbean Beat. This benefit to support the arts and service learning programming of the school will be held Saturday night, May 30th, from 7 to 10 at St. Columbus Church Hall, 6401 San Pablo Avenue at Alcatraz in Oakland. Tickets are $20 per person at the door. The silent auction will feature artwork donated by local artists, restaurant and theater vouchers, tropical food and cocktails, and cool Caribbean vibes care of local DJs. For more information, go to www.civicorps.org.